Elizabeth, will you do a short introduction or am I going straight to Giancarlo?
Straight to Carlo, please.
Yeah. So good morning, board members. This month we have three papers for discussion. The first addresses disclosure requirements on the impairment review for goodwill and intangible assets within definite useful lives. The second continues last month's discussion about scope of the possible IFRS standard. And the third asks whether the consultation document should be an exposure draft or a discussion paper. So agenda paper 31A, so the first paper, considers whether any, and if so, which disclosure requirements about the impairment review for goodwill and intangible assets within definite useful lives should be included in the proposed standard. There is a measurement difference between IFRS standards and the IFRS for SME standard in accounting for this asset, but such difference does not relate to how the impairment test is calculated. Paragraphs 134 to 137 of IS 36 set out disclosure requirements and other guidance on the topic, while the IFRS for SME standard has no similar or equivalent disclosures. Now, the paper examines three alternatives, that is whether none, all, or some of the disclosure requirements in paragraphs 134 to 137 of IS 36 should be included in the proposed standard. The staff recommend that some of the disclosure requirements should be included, and these are listed in paragraph 14 of the paper. And with that, let me open the floor for discussion.
Who can I give the floor to? Tadeo. Okay.
Thank you, Hans. Actually, it's just to say that I support staff's recommendation, especially because of the measurement difference. It does make a difference, the required disclosure. It becomes even more relevant the longer from the date of the business combination or the acquisition of the intangible. It is not just, I think that Carlos said that it's not just the impairment test matter, as the argument in paragraph 11 suggests. Actually, it's the measurement difference that makes the disclosure relevant, the amortization or not amortizing the goodwill that makes the disclosure even more important. Therefore, I support the staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Tom?
Yeah, just like Tadeo, I support the staff recommendation. I think the arguments that this is that some disclosures are relevant to that user group for this kind of a thing, and I think the staff have it right of getting the most important disclosures. The other ones I think would be excessively detailed, so I support exactly where you are. Thank you.
Then Chao.
Thank you, Hans. As Tom and Dario said, I also support staff's recommendation. Although under both IFRS standards and IFRS for SME standards, goodwill and intangible assets are all subject to impairment tests. But actually, that means the impairment test, methodology is same, but actually the carrying amount of those assets which impairments was built on actually different. One is amortized cost, the other is the cost. So from my point of view, there's still a recognition and measurement difference there, and the BC 157 would apply. But as this paper said that applying BC 157 may end up requiring companies to disclose all information required in paragraph 134 to 135 of IS 36. So if so, it would not meet the objective of this reduced disclosure standards, which we aim to reduce the cost for subsidiaries that are SMEs. Therefore, on balance, particularly considering the cost and the benefit, I agree to only require company to disclose some of the information required in paragraphs 134 to 135 of IS 36, That means particularly focusing on those disclosure requirement related to those key assumption when the companies try to make a cash flow, you know, projections. So I agree with staff's recommendation. I also agree to add guidance in paragraph 136 of IS, 36, but not paragraph 137.
Okay, Nick.
Thank you, Hans. So I was able to observe and to participate to an extent in some of the calls that staff had with lenders around this topic. Lenders being a I think one of the main user groups in terms of IFRS for subsidiaries. And here, I guess the things that I took away from that is that generally in their lending decisions, those lenders ascribed no value to intangibles whatsoever. They had very little interest in the intangibles. Certainly they wouldn't put a value on goodwill. They wouldn't particularly put a value on other intangibles that were only recognized in a business combination. They did, however, have some interest in impairment. And for me, the interest in impairment was that it was a signal that something had changed in the continuing cash flows of the business. And clearly, given they are focused entirely on cash flows and the ability of borrowers to repay their lendings, that seemed to be relevant information for them. So I certainly don't think all the disclosures are required. I think there is a case for some partial disclosures or perhaps even none. I took the impairment as being a trigger where they would seek to undertake further work with their customer, with the borrower, to understand why the impairment had happened. But on balance, I think I'd be happy to support the staff recommendation here. So thank you.
Anne?
Thanks, Hans. This is an issue that had to be addressed by the AASB in Australia when they were doing their reduced disclosure standard. And they actually arrived at a different place to where our staff recommendation is. So it's interesting to have a look at why they got to a different place. It isn't for the reasons that Nick was exploring, which it wasn't that they worked out that the information wouldn't be useful. They did decide that the override, the general requirement for disclosure of significant judgments and estimates and information about that would be sufficient to get the disclosures. But I think they had more structural reasons to do with the way they were developing and their starting base and how they were developing their standard. They were the reasons that they decided not to require the disclosures, not a reason that we would take on, which would be no demand for the information. So considering all of that, I would agree with the staff recommendation as it stands. Thank you.
Sue?
When I looked at this, I agree with the staff recommendation. I think on balance, it's about the appropriate level of disclosures for the topic. However, for the reasons that Nick expressed, I did sort of hesitate and wonder whether there was a real need, because I similarly, coming from a banking background, remember that in credit analysis, we used to just sort of take away the goodwill, and similarly, prudential regulators take that perspective. So I wondered whether lenders would have been sort of taking a more conservative approach to the thinking about goodwill to start with, which would sort of remove some of the necessity for these disclosures. But I think what's proposed is a reasonable balance. And if people come back and say that actually they don't even need that, we can find that out through exposure. So I'm happy to support where the staff recommended.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Can I then see if we can support the staff's recommendation? Okay, thank you. So Carlo, you are now going to paper 31C.
I think Elizabeth would be talking about the scope first.
Okay, let's talk about the scope first. Elizabeth. Elizabeth?
I think you're
on mute.
So sorry. As Hans has just said, Agenda 31B paper is on scope. This is the same paper we brought to you last month, but we updated it in the light of comments that we heard in that meeting. The first question, so there's two questions in the paper. The first question is whether the scope should be wider than subsidiaries to the SMEs, and the staff, as you can see, are recommending retaining as the scope subsidiaries versus SMEs, but seeking views in the consultation on widening the scope, people's thoughts. Second part of the paper explores three possible limitations if you actually agree to retain the scope of subsidiaries versus SMEs. And here I just want to bring to your attention that I've changed the recommendation from December. So in December, we were recommending that it should be subsidiaries at the year end in order to qualify to apply the reduced disclosure standards. But having heard comments in the December meeting that this could be quite harsh for a subsidiary that was sold outside a group very shortly before its year end, we have updated the recommendation. But part of the thinking is the whole thinking behind the whole project is to provide practical relief to these subsidiaries. And so carrying on with that, we thought that to change it to being a subsidiary at any point during the reporting period could provide practical relief to a subsidiary. So shortly before its year end, that relief would only extend for that 1 year. Subsequent years, obviously, it wouldn't apply. So with that, I will invite your comments.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth. Mary?
Yes, thanks, Hans. I wanted to comment on the big picture question about scope, the question that you've teed up on page 13. I agree with the staff recommendation, but I wanted to give some maybe background color and caution. And the caution is about the phrase that's used about the board consults on widening the scope of the proposed standard, because it sounds like we'd go out to the world and say, hey, would you like us to make this more broadly applicable? And, you know, if we pitch it that way, I think we'll get, we'll both send a signal that's maybe not fully consistent with our discussion and also maybe not elicit the feedback we need to make a decision. Because, Elizabeth, when you just said that the purpose of this project is reducing costs for subsidiaries, it is. But there's a second piece to that, which is, well, still providing the information that users need for financial statements of these types of entities. And so it's really important that we understand what these types of entities are and whether there's any difference in terms of the information needs. I certainly think our decision about scope is a critical one for this project. And so, of course, I'd expect that we'd explain why we reached the conclusion that we reached, and that, of course, is something that could elicit discussion, comment, responses. But I don't want to go out and phrase something as, hey, would you guys like us to make this more broadly available? Because I don't think we'd get the information that we need to evaluate those responses. And the other thing, and I apologize in advance, it's a bit of a soapbox speech, but the brand that has built up around I4S standards is really valuable, not just to us, but also to all of those who've invested in adopting it, applying it in their financial statements, contributing to our process. It means something. And this is, I'm not going to get into whether or not this is a third tier, you know, creating a third tier of I4S standards. I think we just have to recognize that we are experimenting, and I think we should be cautious in our experiment rather than sweeping in our experiment. So I think I would err on the side of remembering our original focus, what prompted us to do this project, getting experience with how that works, whether it does meet the user needs, before we would be inclined to say, let's just make this more broadly applicable. So my overall urge is caution, and that's the end of my soapbox comments. Thanks.
Okay, Okay, Françoise.
Yes, thank you. I'm interested in Mary's concern about us explaining in terms of users' needs how we can reduce the scope to subsidiaries only. In fact, last time I developed arguments in favor of extending the scope very widely, I think, and I'm happy with the paper reflecting the arguments that I may have expressed at that time. So my attempt today will not be to convince that the scope should be extended. It would be to hopefully enlighten everyone that in paragraph 23, there is absolutely no argument in favor of restricting the scope that holds in standard setting terms. We're governed by our conceptual framework, and the conceptual framework brings in the cost constraint, and that should also guide us in the choices we make. But if I take the arguments one after the other, the first argument about the third tier, I mean, it has its contradiction in paragraph 22, so I don't want to comment on this again. Argument B, we have already concluded that for entities that are not publicly accountable, they should apply the IFRS for SMEs. If that is our conclusion, we should stay away from applying the IFRS to subsidiaries. We should they are not publicly accountable entities, so it doesn't hold. Argument C, that we have not conducted research. I mean, I don't want to comment too much on that, except that we had decided that we would consider scope in the end. So why we don't have the evidence necessary, I don't know. But it's not a standard setting argument. Argument D, it would be difficult to understand the rationale for choosing IFRS with reduced disclosure. I mean, we know that of the diversity of SMEs, we know of that we have some that are more sophisticated than others. We know that we have this fallback on IS 39 in the IFRS for SMEs. I mean, that is an illustration of that diversity. So there are many reasons to that. Argument E, we would be afraid of receiving calls that we should not respond to. I don't think that's a fear we are really afraid of. Argument F, we're stepping in the shoes of jurisdictions, and that's not our role to, I think our role is to provide standards that lead jurisdictions to adopt them in the for the benefits of users, and if the IFRS for SMEs on the one hand for some, the IFRS with a reduced disclosure standard for others provide a good cost-benefit trade-off for entities. Jurisdictions have to be responsible for the decisions of adoption that they make. And none would be a bad decision if we are confident that we do the right thing in our standard setting. Argument G, I think we are not a business enterprises considering possible cannibalism between its very various projects. So it's not a standard setting argument either. Argument H, we will not be deprived from doing the right thing later. So if we can do the right thing today, why do it later? So there is, I'm grateful also for the reminder in paragraph 24 that being a subsidiary has had absolutely no bearing on the choices made of this reduced disclosures standard. So when you don't have a link between your scope and your decision, you wonder why you have established your scope. And finally, with the mention that Elizabeth made in her introduction to flip-flopping between whether you can apply the reduced disclosure standard with IFRS or not, I think we also have no good rationale for imposing on entities whether they are a subsidiary and when they cease to be a subsidiary to stop applying IFRS with reduced disclosure. Because if it satisfied its users' needs before, why would it stop doing so? So really, in standard setting terms, I think we are just setting ourselves aside from irrational standard setter behavior.
Okay, Bruce. Oh no, Tadeo first and then Bruce.
Thank you, Hans. And thank you, Elizabeth, for bringing this paper. I think that it was a good work in terms of putting the arguments pro and cons for the widening of the scope. Just a technical point here that you have used in the text the term single entity financial statements. I think it would be worth making clear what you mean with that single entity financial statement. Some may believe that it's a separate statement. I mean, that it's not something that I personally found clear in the current standards, the definition of single entity financial statement. And going back to the main point of the paper, I agree that the initial focus was subsidiaries that are SMEs. That was something that was pop up in the agenda, agenda consultation 2015. But I personally believe the arguments in paragraph 22 to widening the scope to all SMEs are stronger than those in paragraph 23 that defend the limited scope. And I think that Francois made very good points on one by one, and I will not repeat them. I personally prefer to have the scope widened and then consult on whether the respondents agree, and for those that disagree, the reasons and suggestions. Thank you very much.
Bruce?
Thanks very much, Hans. I, as many of you may remember from the last meeting we discussed this, am on the other side of this. I'm not in favor of extending the scope. And if I just kind of run through the reason for that, to start off with, I do think that we've set a standard which has a specific purpose in mind. Now, I appreciate that, and I do appreciate that what Francois said, that yes, we have got a situation, we've got to say, is it all about standard setting, the standard setting rationale? But I don't think we can look at it just from that point of view, because I do think that as a board, we're also looking at the impact that our global set of standards has on everybody. And a simple example for that would be to me, if we were to decide to widen this project, I would have a very different view on alignment under the SME standard, because I would think, well, if people can use this, why would we not need an aligned SME standard? So I do think that the decisions are not necessarily just can we work through them and say, would it be based on the scope and the length there? I think we do need to look at the wider range. Secondly, I come from a situation where we've got some developing economies who've actually said to us in the past, they would want to use the SME standard for smaller listed companies. Saying that they're not well traded, they want that. And we've always gone back and saying, no, the standard is written with a specific purpose. We're keeping it in there that you have to have no public accountability. So we have got involved in setting who can use those standards, and that does drive the approach we have to that. So I think when you start looking at those projects, it is impacting what we do. I still think that we do have a gold standard in IFRS. And I think in a perfect world, we would just have IFRS and that would be it. I completely accept the scope of this project, that there is a massive cost saving available to people. And what we are saying is we're saying that when we've set an IFRS standard, take disclosures on things like impairment we were discussing earlier. When we've set the gold standard, we believe that is what people need in order to deliver what we call an IFRS set of standards. To me, what this project is saying, we can accept that in certain situations when you're an SME, we will allow you, because of X and Y reason, if you're in the scope of the SME standard, we will allow you as a gold standard IFRS reporter to report less disclosure. And we've given those reasons and the rationale why we've done that, which I'm not going to go into. But I think that we've made that decision around those. I think to start going now and lightening this load, my worry becomes, are we ending up creating a situation where we have a diluted IFRS? Now, the reason I tie this in is this ties in, and I don't know if we're discussing both sides of the paper, but this ties into my view on whether we should be allowing people to continue to use this if they stop being SMEs. Now, my view is I think that you need to make that assessment at your end. You need to decide at your end, do you meet the scoping requirements of the standard in order to use it? Not if at any point during the year you used it. The reason I say that is because if you think about it, there's two reasons. Firstly, there's consistency. If I think of things like an IFRS 8 disclosure, if I think of whether I'm a first-time adopter, if I consider all those other standards, all those standards are an assessment I have to make a point in time as to whether those apply. Secondly, my other challenge is if we're in a situation where somebody now was within the scope of this, assume a December year end, they come out of the scope in January that year, they now we're saying for the next 11 months, even though they're not in the scope of the standard, we're going to allow them to use the standard. But then suddenly at the end of the year for the following year, they need to change. There's been no economic event, no change in their shareholding, no change potentially in their user base. But we're suddenly saying, well, we'll let you use it for this year, but for next year, it's not, we don't think it's appropriate. I don't see on what basis we do that. To me, it's very simple to say we have the scoping of the SME standard. If you meet the scoping requirements at the point to which you're doing your reporting, that is what you report on. You can use this framework. If you don't, you go outside. The other thing I want to say is I strongly would support the view that I think that we've got a great project here that can give people a lot of value. My worry is that this project's going to get bogged down in us starting to try and extend the scope further and go back and forth. I think this is the first time, well, that I can think of, we've done a project like this which has produced a reduced disclosure framework. Let's go out there and see how it works with that limited user base. If we then get to a stage that somewhere down the line, we do a PIR 2 years down the line and everybody says this will be great for SMEs, then we can relook at it. I just worry that if we start opening this up to everybody, and I do agree with those points that were put there, it's not a stable platform for SMEs. It's not what we're wanting. It's not what we wanted in terms of what our gold standard was. And I don't believe it's what we started out doing the project as. I think we end up in a situation where we kind of keep going on. So I feel like Mary and I'm getting on my soapbox, but I guess it's just to say I really think that this to me is a specific project with a specific scope, and I'd really rather we kept it within that. Otherwise, I think we are just going to start blowing this out of proportion. And I will say I think we're going to heavily damage what happens on the SME side.
Thank you, Bruce. Well said. I couldn't agree with it more and couldn't have said it better. Tom.
Yeah, so last time I made the comment that I thought we needed to ask the question and generate more information. That's still where I am. I won't go through the arguments on either side. I think I agree with Mary that we should be explicit about the extent of the widening. That question needs to be explicit. So we don't want everybody pouring in except those that we are willing to consider. So we would have to decide clearly what that widening would be. But I think, you know, when I go through those paragraphs, there is enough there in 22, and I've heard enough to suggest that there will be some interest in this that's legitimate. And so for me to decide, I would like to get that information in. And the only way to do that is to ask a question. So I support the staff suggestion. I think we should be explicit about what the widening would be. And then ask the question. And as long as we provide an appropriate analysis that lays out the issues clearly and with enough prominence as well, I think that'll be important. Because if we just label it with the current label, we still need people to realize that this question is in there. So it's going to need to be some communication. So question needs to be in, communications, people need to be aware that question's in. And then I support what the staff are recommending.
Thank you, Tom. Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hans. I also agree with staff's recommendation. I think that at this stage of the project, I think it's better to focus on our initial objective of this project, which is try to reduce the disclosure burden for those subsidiaries which are eligible to apply IFIs for SME standards, but they have to apply IFI standards because of their group applies IFI standards, or they have to use the same recognition and measurement requirement as IFI standards. So if we expand the scope of the project to all SMEs, I worry about, you know, because the objective of the project, the issues we are going to address and the factors we will consider in with regard to this project would be different. I understand that, you know, the concerns in the paragraph 22 and also the comments made by Francois and Tadieu, I think it's understandable. But at this moment, I really think that we should be very cautious to expand the scope. It's relevant, it's related to the brand, as Mary said, and also Bruce said, we have very golden standard there, but we should be very cautious to expand the scope further. For example, if SMEs really concerned about the cost of applying IFI standards, I think there is IFIs for SME standards available for them to apply. So I think this will significantly reduce the cost for those SMEs. So if an SME which is eligible to apply IFI standards, and also they can apply IFIs for SME standards, but they decided to apply IFIs, you know, standards, can apply, you know, IFIs for SME standards, but they decided to apply IFI standards, I think the cost might not be the big factor for those SMEs when they made a decision to move towards to apply IFIs standards. So in particularly, I always thinking about that, the incremental cost of applying recognition and a measurement requirement of four IFI standards might be much higher than the incremental cost of applying additional disclosure requirement. So I think the rationale of IS for SMEs moving to apply IFI's standards is most likely they are trying to gain the full benefits of IFI standards fully in order to meet the user's needs or achieve some special purpose. So if so, I think the reduced disclose may not be consistent with the rationale of choosing to apply IFI standards rather than IFIs for SME standards. I think I agree with the argument made in paragraph 23, particularly 23D. So in this regard, I prefer that the scope of the project still should focus on subsidiaries that are SMEs. With regard to whether we need to consult this issue, particularly whether we needed to widen the scope or not, as a question, I also a little bit concerned, because if we really want to consult this question, I think we should make clear how wide of this scope will be. I think it will help us to gather detailed information with regard to this question. But I prefer to focus on narrow scope of the project in order to reduce the further risk and of the project.
Okay, thank you, Jian Chao. Rika.
Thank you, Hans. Thank you, staff, for preparing this paper. And I support staff recommendation, especially about the scope, the explorer. When we consider the scope of this new reduced standards, I think we must consider the quality of the overall financial statement prepared by those subsidiaries that SMEs, including in compliance with the requirement of both recognition, measurement, and reduced disclosures. The overarching internal controls over the group reporting process and system of the parent company will underpin a certain level of quality in the financial statement prepared by the subsidiary that the SME is, given we understand the complexity of applying significant judgment and the requirement of the full IFRS standards. So the extent of parent company's oversight framework of subsidiaries will significantly affect the capability of the subsidiaries' preparation of the IFRS financial statement. So I think it's critical for us to stick to the original scope we've already explored. Thank you.
Sue?
I also agree with the staff recommendation on the scope for the reasons people have said previously, particularly Bruce's arguments. The only thing I would add is that I think that we set out with a very particular purpose. We think we've got the appropriate accounting for SMEs with our SME standard. We've got the appropriate accounting for public interest entities with IFRS. And we were asked to look at a very particular population that have got a particular set of cost-benefit considerations. Entities that are SMEs, but have a view to providing information for consolidation. And I think we should stick to that objective. I think it makes it very clear in terms of delineation. I think it makes it a very straightforward question in terms of keeping recognition and measurement fully aligned with full IFRS. Whereas if we broaden the population, we're going to have alignment questions like we do with SMEs, the further we get away from a consolidation perspective. And I think we should just stick with that. And I think the reality is in standard setting, you need to be cautious when you make changes to make sure that they are appropriate, that they work well, and that they're effective. If you move too quickly, it's very hard to row back. Whereas if we test something, we can always more easily move forward. And so I agree with the staff recommendation.
Martin.
Yeah, thanks, Hans. I also agree with staff recommendation and basically what Bruce has said, because I think our role is as a global standard setter to have a standard for a certain kind of entity, which we have full IFRS for listed companies and we have IFRS for SMEs for non-listed companies. But I think it is not our role to have a third and maybe a fourth kind of standard which people can then pick. It should be this standard which we are convinced are appropriate for this kind of entities. And we have developed this project, at least I agree to that, because it was a cost only for cost benefit things, because preparers who already prepare IFRS, full IFRS financial statements can use it, not any other purpose. And therefore, I think it is not appropriate to extend the scope. And even if we, I also not in agreement that we ask this question, because if people come back to us and say, yes, it should be also for the scope should be widened, and I have not discussed that for another type of entity. We have discussed that for the series which have parents with full IFRS. That was a purpose which we have done. We have not discussed for if that disclosure is appropriate for others. And therefore, I even would not ask that question, because it was a special purpose project what we have done, and the scope was not in all the discussions which we had during the several months. We have not discussed is the disclosure and also this BZ-157. We have discussed it for this special purpose and not for any other things. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. So you suggest we should not even ask the question, and I think I would agree with that. It's just confusing. Nick.
Thanks. I would also support not expanding the scope from where we are today, really for the reasons that others have already talked about. I just wanted to pick up on the second issue that Bruce mentioned, which is the extent to which subsidiaries would qualify to use the reduced disclosure standard, and particularly whether they, at the end of their reporting period, they were subsidiaries of a parent presenting consolidated financial statements applying IFRS, or whether they simply had to be a subsidiary of a parent during the course of the year. I think in virtually most or virtually all circumstances, whether it's a disposal, whether it's a LBO, whether it's a demerger, these things take time to plan. And I think there are very few circumstances where you wouldn't have time to prepare the accounts that you needed to do as a new entity. So, and I'm worried under those about the circumstances where, let's say, you were sold on January the 1st and you could report for the whole of that year using the reduced disclosure standard. So I think it's cleaner to stick to where we were previously in that it should be an end of the year cutoff. Thank you.
Anne?
Thanks, Hans. I just wanted to ask Elizabeth, are we talking about scope and voting on scope, or are we going to talk about the other parts of the paper now?
My apologies for not making that clear at the beginning, because I obviously introduced both parts. We certainly take the vote that if you can do, but you can do either. Some people have already, like Nick's just done.
Okay.
After the first vote, if then you want additional conversation, you can.
Thanks, Elizabeth. I was just wondering with this first vote whether it needs to be broken up, listening to the discussions, because there are people looks like they would support the scope proposed by the staff, but don't want to consult. So I'm just wondering if you want to break that up, because there are some people who favour consulting, support the recommendation with consulting, some people support the recommendation without consulting. So maybe you want to break that up. I wanted to talk about the point of
Let me interrupt. When you say without consulting, you mean without asking that question if it should be covered. Is that correct?
Yes. Out the ED with putting out the consultation document without a question about a wider scope.
I've
heard two or three people say.
Would agree that. With having separate questions.
Okay. I wanted to raise the issue around, this is in the second part of the paper, raise the issue around the parent. And the way we've got the paper framed at the moment, the recommendation is that the parent uses IFRS standards. And if the parent uses IFRS standards, then the subsidiary will have the ability to use the reduced disclosure standard. And I just wanted to ask about what we're going to do. Is it just the parent uses IFRS standards, yes or no? Or are we going to consider when there's the issue of what's considered to be IFRS equivalent standards? And I just wanted to raise that question because I think it's relevant to how we vote on that. So I don't know if the staff have considered what to do about standards that are considered to be IFRS equivalent. That becomes another scope question. Do we just stay with it has to be IFRS as issued by the IASB that they're using, or IFRS? There are some standards like US GAAP that in some jurisdictions are considered equivalent to IFRS. So would the subsidiaries of that entity be in a position to use the reduced disclosure standard? It's a question for staff.
Do you want me to come in on that now? And then, Michelle, if you want to add any more, please do. This has come up with one board member raised this, and this has come up. So when the paper was prepared and we looked at that, we did look at IFRS 10 and Para 4 in particular, which is, it permits subsidiaries that are themselves parents to not have to present consolidated financial statements if they meet all conditions. And one of those conditions is that they're included in a group that prepares IFRS financial statements. So the intention was to use the same wording, but this has come up. We've done some background research, and Michelle might want to come in because she's much more familiar than me on this. My understanding is for IFRS 10, a number of the different jurisdictions have brought their own adaptation in. So in particular, I believe that in the EU, there is the EU have the concept of equivalence of IFRS, but I believe that's been dealt with jurisdiction by jurisdiction. But the intention had been to use the same as IFRS 10. Michelle, do you want to add any more?
No, I think it's a good point. So, and we noticed, for instance, that in Australia, they've added to IFRS 10 paragraph 4, and then in Europe, for IFRS 10, that paragraph doesn't apply, and there's a paragraph in the directives that apply. I think we have a little bit more research to do, but I think it will be, yeah, I think we just need to do a little bit more research, but we would base it on the paragraph in IFRS 10.
Yeah,
thank you. I wanted to come back on the question of whether we would consult on the scope explicitly. I can't think of any exposure draft issued by the ISB where there is a scope discussion and there is no question raised about the scope. Being in a way not raising that question, not accepting that this question is raised, is in a way not being fully in favor of a truly open consultation. How come would we tell people we don't want to hear from you about one very relevant item in the work we do? Why on earth would we not have this question? I came to this meeting not doubting that this question would be raised. And if it is not there, to me it would be unbelievable not to raise that question. I hope that the discussion is going to be in the basis as well.
Zach?
I think Sue wanted to interject quickly.
Thanks, Zach. I just on this point on the consultation, it's always hard when you're sitting at home by yourself in a room, sort of trying to guess what everybody else is thinking. But my sense is we might be talking at cross purposes. Because I think, of course, when we put out a document, we would typically say it's proposed that these companies would qualify for these proposals. Do you agree or not? So I think there would always be a question like that on scope, if you like. Whereas I think that the question is really around whether, in addition, there's a more specific question that would say, you know, something like an alternative scope would be to, you know, incorporate, you know, categories A, B, and C. Do you agree or not? So I think it's more the specificity around the question that I suspect that we're commenting on, as opposed to suggesting that there'd be no question at all on whether or not people agreed that these proposals should apply to subsidiaries of SMEs or whatever the decision is. I think that's the subtlety, Francoise, rather than suggesting we're just ignoring scope. And so I think the question for some is really, how specific do we want to be, and how much would we want to say the board does or doesn't think that's a good idea for A, B, and C reasons? And so how much you want to bring that out as something that's sort of really on the table, as opposed to something that was considered, and this is why the board hasn't proposed it. I think it's a matter of degree that we're really talking about.
Françoise?
Yes, I think, you know, I don't know how you, I'm not sure I'm subtle enough expect a question of this or that form. To me, however the question is phrased, the discussion that we have in this paper is irrelevant. So I think we, very much as we articulate everything we do, we should have a question and say the board has decided that the reduced disclosure framework should apply to subsidiaries of listed groups. The board explained its rationale in basis for conclusions paragraph X and Z. Do you agree? because this is totally part of the deliberation that we've had, and excluding that from the consultation to me would not be fair.
Zach?
So a couple of things I wanted to bring up. The first was I'm supportive of maintaining the scope as described in the first question. And the rationale quickly there is that I think the disclosures that we've put in place for the reduced disclosure standard were developed with that in mind, so that if we were to expand that universe, we would need to go back and review those disclosures and understand which ones might change. And so while we can certainly ask a question, I think we should be very clear that that would significantly extend the scope of the project in my mind, because I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that without reviewing those implications. Perhaps I'm wrong because I've only been here 6 months, but that was my understanding of the way those disclosure standards were developed. That was the scope that was in mind. The second thing I wanted to bring up was on this question of subsidiaries have a parent that prepares under IFRS financial statements. I think I'll out myself as being the person that asked about that, because it's not completely clear to me what that means. It seems like a very simple statement, but there are a number of permutations of IFRS standards around the world. And if we're delegating the responsibility of what's an IFRS standard preparer to local jurisdictions, then we need to be clear about that in the standard. And if we're dictating what that means, I think we need to be clear exactly what we mean, because there are a number of jurisdictions that are very close to IFRS standards. There are some that are less close, but close enough that I think they have a strong argument that they would benefit from the reduced costs we're providing, without giving up much in terms of the disclosures that their subsidiary users would need. So I'd be in favor of exploring both of those issues, whether we need to be more specific on what we mean by parents that prepare under IFRS. And second, whether there's additional scope for subsidiaries that are SMEs whose parents may not be full IFRS preparers to use the reduced disclosure standard.
Martin.
Yeah, again on this scope, right? It is not, I have not said we should not even touch what's the scope. And the objective of this project was for a specific scope of entities, which are SMEs, which are as subsidiaries. That was a total objective, right? It's clear. And therefore, I think, but it's different if we would say then, okay, asking a question, do you think, okay, we should widening the scope for any kind of SMEs? Or should we even say, maybe the scope is also appropriate for subsidiaries which are not SMEs? And that is kind of active questions to enlarge the scope. And that was my point. We should not do that, because that was not what we have discussed in this project. Is it appropriate for different type of entities? And clearly, we can, in the basis of conclusion, we should maybe say, okay, that was what we discussed about the scope. But should we really make an active question, engaging people, okay, thinking about enlarging the scope? And that is what I think we should not do, because that was not the objective of this project. It was for a certain kind of entities.
Tadeo?
Thank you, Hans. It's just a very quick comment. When I joined the board of advisors for this project, I remember that in my first meeting, I asked it why the scope was limited to subsidiaries that are SMEs. I clearly remember this one, because at that time, as it today, I think that it would be beneficial as well. And the answer at that time was that it would be discussed in the end, that we should first see whether we would be able to develop this customized reduced disclosure. And now that we come up to the question on the scope, it seems that no, we have already decided that it should be limited to subsidiaries that are SMEs. I personally think that there are many companies that could be benefited by this one, as the argument in paragraph 22. That's why I definitely believe that it should be widened. I can see that definitely the majority is going towards focusing on the original scope. But I think that there are ways of asking and having a question on the scope is not meaning that you think that should be widened, but at least the scope should be something that should be clearly treated within the questions. Thank you.
Okay, well, it's time to wind up. And perhaps the staff, in precisely writing down the question, can think back of Mary's words of caution in the beginning. Obviously, when scope is an important question, people must have a chance to talk about it. And I also agree with the basis for conclusions bearing an imprint of the discussion that we had. So I leave it in the hands of the staff to come up with a good solution for this. In the meantime, can I see who agrees with the staff recommendation?
So what is this, question one?
Yes. Okay. Then the final question.
Do you want to make any additional comments on the final question? I know a number of people already have, but you just say sorry.
I will. On this question of, you know, when do you need to be a subsidiary? Personally, I think that there are costs for entities if they have to change during the year to starting to think about a broader set of disclosures than they would have at the beginning of the year. So I could see it as a form of sort of transition relief that's different to the overall scope question. But in the interest of sort of clarity of scope, if you like, for the document that goes out for consultation, given the complexity of the whole discussion around scope, I'm comfortable to go with actually the opposite approach. So to say that you need to be a subsidiary as at the reporting date, if that just makes it a simpler analysis.
Any other comments? Mary?
I support Sue's comment about keeping it at the reporting date. I just wanted to make the observation that I think we should draft it in such a way that it's at the reporting date, not at the end of the annual period, because I could see it being useful for an entity that changed with, you know, status within the course of the year. If for some reason they were doing interim financial statements, to do those if at the reporting date they still were a subsidiary, even if, let's say, after the reporting date they became not a subsidiary. I just want to say, don't tie it to annual reporting periods, tie it to the reporting date is my suggestion. Thank you.
Françoise?
I would follow Sue's line of reasoning. So I'm happy that the date is defined, but the transition relief is absolutely important. So it needs to be defined. It's not immediate. It cannot be immediate.
Okay. Can I see? Tadeu?
Yeah, it's just a quick comment. If we just follow that is limited subsidiaries that are SMEs, and for any reason a company is no longer subsidiaries that are SME. It still is SME, but no longer subsidiaries of a company applying IFRS. I mean, that if they are allowed for that first year that it happens to not have to have the full disclosures, but in the following year, they will do it. I mean, that I don't see any harm in following the over the year if it was a subsidiary of a company preparing IFRS for SME. I think it doesn't make a big difference and might give some time for the company come back and prepare full disclosure for the next year. Thank you.
Can I see who agrees with the staff's recommendation?
Can I just check in the light of what Sue said? Are we basing on the questions asked and therefore it's at any point in the year, or are we varying the questions to at the year end? And I apologize, I'm asking that just after today. I just made a plea supporting
So the staff recommendation is that you, as long as you are a subsidiary sort of at the beginning of the year, then it would be applicable.
At any point.
Yeah, and my suggestion was to do the opposite. So I think, do we want to call whether the board agrees that they need to be a subsidiary that's an SME as at the reporting date? Do you want to call that? So that's different to the staff recommendation. Yeah. So could we get a show of hands on that specific wording?
Okay.
Then, Carlo?
Yeah. So agenda paper 31C discusses whether the board should publish an exposure draft or a discussion paper. So in developing the recommendation, the staff considered factors discussed in agenda paper 28 of the February 2018 board meeting. And these factors are analyzed within the context of the project. And based on this analysis, particularly because the suggested disclosure requirements are best illustrated in an exposure draft, the staff recommend that the consultation document should be an exposure draft. Yep. So would like to hear any of your comments?
No comments. Do we agree that it should be an exposure draft? Okay. Thank you.
11, sorry. Oh, 12.
All right. Okay, I suggest we take a break. We are a bit ahead of schedule. Let's take a break till 10:30.